This episode is brought to you by our sponsors at Adult Time, the ultimate subscription platform for premium adult content. With over 55,000 episodes, 300 channels, and new releases every single day, it's everything you'd want in one place. And you can use promo code BREEMILLS, that's BREEMILLS, to try a free week on us. Assuming you are 18 plus, of course, and you can discover how we do porn differently. Hi, my name is Bree Mills, and I am a porn director with a purpose. Now, throughout my career, I have covered just about every niche, and I've created some award-winning films and brands along the way. But now, I'm much more interested in getting to know the real people behind my characters. And that's because I believe adult entertainers can be some of the most powerful role models when it comes to sex ed, consent, empowerment, and wellness. By asking the right questions, our community can really help people better understand themselves. So that's the mission of this podcast. Let's get up close. All right, so we're just going to get into this. Lulu Chu, I've wanted to talk to you on this podcast since I started it because we were chatting on the Feed Me set, which, by the way, congratulations. Nominations just came out. I know by the time this airs, the awards may have already happened, but you worked incredibly hard on that project, and I'm happy to see you got recognized. So a little shout out to you for that.
It was so great to do that, honestly. Yeah.
For anybody who doesn't know, can you just describe that film in like one sentence?
Oh, one sentence? How about this? A sheltered Christian girl gets possessed by sex demon, has a lot of sex, and gets exorcised.
Yeah. There you go. You can see it on Adult Time. There was also a monster vagina.
Yeah. My vagina had teeth and it talked in a German accent.
There you go. So apart from that, tell me a fun fact about yourself.
I say this a lot, but I'm adopted. Not many people expect that. So I was raised by a white family in Oklahoma, which was interesting as an Asian.
Tell me about that.
I never got like specifically hate crimed, thank God. But, you know, there was just a lot of comments in school, a lot of like microaggressions and casual racism. Like, oh, of course you got 100 on the test. You're Asian. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. There was one guy who would yell Kung Pao chicken whenever he saw me for no reason. He didn't even like mix it up. Not like orange chicken or anything. Just. Same thing.
The one. Yeah.
Not even like
potentially woman. Derogatory term you could think of to throw it out.
So that was great.
Awesome. Oklahoma.
Yeah.
That sounds like that was almost a musical number. Oklahoma. What's it like growing up in Oklahoma?
Kind of what you would expect. Very flat. Lots of wheat and cows and racist people. Christians. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of that.
What was one of the aspects of your upbringing that you look back on now and you really treasure?
That's actually hard. Yeah, no, my childhood was mainly negative and still positive.
Yeah.
Something I treasure. I don't know. I do think my parents instilled in me a very good sense of like community responsibility. And I do treasure that. I think not enough people are taught that. And it's really important.
I ask that because oftentimes, you know, you don't think about the good when there's a lot of challenges, right?
Yeah.
But it is, it's always in there. It usually brings you to where you are now. Mm-hmm. So maybe share to what you feel comfortable with a little bit about what your upbringing was like and how that helped to shape the person that I'm talking to today.
Well, we were raised Catholic and very much so. Like my dad was a Sunday school teacher. I was an altar server. And that obviously was like a big part of it. So I am now burdened with a lot of Catholic guilt and unresolved trauma. And then with my family specifically, it was definitely hard. I am neurodivergent, and that showed up a lot in my childhood. And my parents weren't really equipped for that. Especially since, you know, I was adopted, and that has its own special traumas that they didn't entirely understand. And I had three older siblings, so it was kind of like a constant comparison. And it was never anything like big, but I could tell that my parents like treated me and expected me to do better than like my siblings. I was held to a different standard for sure. And I do think race played into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Subconsciously, you know?
You mentioned being neurodivergent. Can you explain a little bit for those who might not be as familiar with that, or educate me as one?
So there's neurotypical and neurodivergent, and neurodivergent is basically when you have like, I don't want to say like a disorder necessarily, but you know, something different, bipolar or ADHD or autistic. And I unfortunately haven't been able to find like a psychiatrist that can fully diagnose me, but I've done extensive research and talked with a lot of therapists. So I'm pretty sure I'm ADHD and autistic, but I've also been told maybe bipolar, maybe borderline personality disorder, potentially a little bit of OCD. We don't know. We're just alphabet soup here.
Yeah. Well, everything that makes you who you are, and I think what's really, one, courageous to be open, and like you said, I am an open book, but being an open book is really, like, it's not easy to be, so, like, there's a lot of courage behind sort of sharing the alphabet soup. The reality is we're so many more people are some kind of ragu, you know, so it's I think just being able to sort of say, hey, I'm not really sure what's going on, but here's where I fall on in all these different levels is super important. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Yeah.
What, you know, kind of without kind of focusing on the you and your kind of growing up within the environment that you had, you mentioned that community responsibility was something that really stuck out to you.
Yeah.
I would assume that came from growing up in a sort of church community environment, of which probably has some negative aspects to it, but then you know, at the same point has also kind of given you that backbone of community that you've taken into adulthood. What kind of led you out of, you know, your upbringing in Oklahoma and kind of brought you here? Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Oh my. Well, since I always had a difficult childhood, I planned on moving out like pretty early. I moved out the week after I turned 18. Just done with that shit. But, you know, being fresh 18, living on your own, like it's tough. So I started doing sex work a few months after. And, you know, that led me to sugar babying, to camming, to porn in Florida, and now out here.
Okay, so let's break that down, because I think there's lessons in each of those, right?
There's a lot.
So, okay, my first question is, you know, I'm always interested in understanding the inclination towards sex work as a type of work, right? Because there's so many stigmas about it, and certainly we all grow up with a lot of that stigma being fed to us. And I think there's a certain amount of, you know, certain difference in generations. Like for me, there wasn't the internet of porn when I was growing up. Probably for you, there was the internet of porn when you were growing up, although you may not have had access to it. So what made you curious about sex work as a potential avenue? Or was it really just a means to an end to get yourself going?
Well, ever since I was in high school, I would like joke that I would turn to sex work. Because, you know, that's funny when you're a high schooler. But I always like considered it real work. Like, even though I would joke about it, I didn't think it was like not a real job or anything.
Yeah.
So it was actually really funny. One day we had a career day at school and I made a joke like, what if I'm going to be a porn star? Like, what should I wear? And now here I am.
Yeah. So. And what was the reaction you got?
Oh, man. Well, from like friends and classmates, when they found out, kind of mixed reaction. Some people were very like, go girl, women mm-hmm. power, like get it. And then others were a little pettier about it, mm-hmm. a little tackier.
Mm-hmm.
And then with my parents, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
My dad could barely even talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had the conversation with my mom, she started crying in the middle of Panera. So that was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that, you know, how would you say relations are with them now?
Well, my dad died a few summers ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So there's, yeah.
But then ever since his death, I think my mom's like really chilled out. Mm-hmm. So I've actually gone back home recently. We spent some time. It's gotten better.
Yeah.
Even though it's still a difficult like topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, you know, sometimes those things need to happen in life and life needs to progress to kind of get
yeah.
new doors open. Right. So I'm sorry to hear about his passing, but I'm glad that in the, at least with you and your mom, it did bring, you know, a next level yeah. in terms of the relationship. You mentioned porn in Florida.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Okay. So let's start giving some advice here. Cause one of the main goals of this whole, the whole real mission behind this podcast, one, to have conversations.
Right.
And it's a great excuse for myself personally, like when I want to chat with somebody, to be able to chat with somebody. But more importantly than that, I think there's a lot of wisdom and life experience and advice that through these conversations we can give to others, whether they're going to enter into sex work or not.
Right.
So maybe tell us, to the degree you feel comfortable, kind of what was that experience like, and then what were some of those big lessons that you learned?
Oh, well, starting in Florida, I will say it's an entirely different like vibe from shooting in LA. It's kind of a Wild West out there. Starting, I was really surprised by how expensive it was to become a porn star. Like, I mean, that's not like Florida specific, but, you know, wardrobe and makeup and travel and usually Ubers, because like most people like fly out of state and mm-hmm. stuff, like it really added up and it was kind of surprising. I feel like in Florida, there's a lot more of like a hookup culture between performers. And I've never really been like that. So that was kind of interesting to deal with and be around. And I feel like for a lot of new girls, that can be really dangerous because like there's definitely a stronger like party culture. And a lot of people fall into that because they think, oh, I'm a porn star. Like, I'm a rock star. It's going to be glam every day. It's going to be so fun and wild. And then they just kind of lose themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's very well said. I've seen a lot of really like incredible people really screw their lives up by falling exactly into that trap. And the whole point about hookup culture, I think, is important to, especially when giving advice to others. I know for us, one of the things that we adjusted within our own consent practices was making sure there was a conversation about what happens when the camera's not rolling.
Right.
Because not everybody's going to want. Some people may, but mm-hmm. not everybody's going to want. And when you're not given the autonomy to like opt out,
yeah.
you know, or it's left to yeah. you to have to navigate one-on-one. I mean, that's where you hear a lot of, you
and
know,
so
traumas
awkward.
That experience. Yeah.
It's so awkward if they're like, can you like help me suck my dick? And I'm like, no,
no,
yeah. no.
So new performers know it is not a guarantee that when the cameras are not rolling, you do not have to
fluff at all.
No, fluffing does not exist.
I usually go like sit in a corner on my mm-hmm. phone.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
like, you have fun over there.
Yeah. And also, you know, you definitely don't need to go out and do all the parties.
No, you do not.
No.
Please don't.
So you ended up starting out in Florida. And then, you know, because obviously that led you to where you are now. What was the catalyst of that experience that kind of brought you to LA and brought you to, you know, all the stuff that you've accomplished since then?
Well, it's a very common thing to start in Florida and then go to LA once you're like a little more established.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of what we did. I did my first like not full year, but like kind of year in Florida. And then I took a little break for a few months to try out college. That mm-hmm. didn't work mm-hmm. out. But I came back and I had enough of a platform that I just went to LA, and my agent kind of poached me from my Florida one, but it happens. Mm-hmm. And now I'm here, just been doing this for the past 4, almost 5 years.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy how fast it goes by.
It does. It's my 14th anniversary this year. Yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah, no, but I mean, in a way, it feels like it was yesterday. And in the other way, it feels like it was a long time.
Years.
Yeah. All right. So let's kind of go back a little bit. What is that like movie you watched or, you know,
everyone
pop culture? Everyone has their thing. So I want to hear what was your first boner moment?
My very first one, I remember this so specifically. I was in first grade. I saw the old Batman with Uma Thurman.
Mm-hmm.
I was absolutely fucking obsessed with Poison Ivy. I could not get her out of my head to the point where I was like on the playground, like playing Batman and Poison Ivy. And then I got in trouble because I blew a kiss the way she did. And then for some reason, the guy like told on me, like, sorry, dude, I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was my very first one. And then later, probably Jennifer's Body.
Mm-hmm. Just okay, like, there you go.
Oh, yeah. God, anytime Amanda and Megan are on screen, they're so hot.
Okay, so I want to hear, what was it about Poison Ivy?
Oh, I don't even, well, I think that was probably just one of my earliest exposures to like a sexual character in general, because, mm-hmm. you know, Christian parents, we'll stay away from that mostly.
Yeah.
So there was that aspect. And then, I don't know, like her confidence, the aesthetic, the idea that like everyone wanted her,
mm-hmm.
that just really attracted mm-hmm. me.
Why do you think that is? This is where I'm just...
I love Dommy Mommies.
There you go.
Okay, I have mommy issues.
There you go. What are some of your like earliest memories as it relates to kind of like self-pleasure and discovering that aspect of yourself?
Well, I never really had an education on it, so I had mm-hmm. to kind of figure it out myself. Honestly, I don't even think I had my first orgasm until I was like 18. Because, I mean, I never had a chance to, like, buy toys or anything. And I have learned that fingers are not enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
They do not go fast enough. So I feel it was kind of weird. I had, like, these few years where I would just, like, get, like, really close. And then it was, like, never mind.
Yeah. And did it, like, I had a very similar experience where, like, there were years of sort of touching yourself, the kind of, like, sort of knowing.
Like, you know there's something going on, but not exactly what.
But I remember, like, one point it ended in a climax and being like, whoa, what is that? But, like... a good number of years after I had, you know, started doing stuff. So then you kind of ask yourself the question of like, what was I doing for all those years? We're just like, there was no end. But yeah, so the question is, I often ask people is like, was there a gap period between like, you know, starting to explore your body and then actually orgasming?
Oh,
and like,
wow.
When it happened, were you planning for it? Did you know what it was? Was it a surprise?
First time I like had a real like obvious orgasm, I was actually camming and I was using my Hitachi and I squirted and I was like, holy shit, like I actually got that like on cam. You guys got to see like my first big O. Like that's exciting.
Yeah.
And then I came like 15 more times.
It was with a Hitachi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Note to anybody. Just get a Hitachi. That's how you figure it out. What was it like being in front of cameras for the first time? Right? Because like you had mentioned that to me, your earliest memory of sexuality was this like strong, confident woman that everybody wanted, right?
Yeah.
So isn't it interesting that you ended up replicating that? You were Poison Ivy in front of those cams.
Not entirely. I'm a sub, but I don't know. I mean, definitely in the beginning, I was nervous, as most people are. But like, and I liked, you know, the validation and the feedback and the response mm-hmm. and the praise. So going into camming, that was a pretty easy transition once I got over like the initial nerves.
Yeah. And then did you have the same experience when you went in front of cameras for the first time shooting a porn? What was that like?
That was definitely different. I got kind of lucky because my test popped my first week. So I got to do solos.
Okay.
And that kind of like eased me in without too much pressure. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty good.
Other questions that I always like to ask is, you know, how you've sort of seen your sexuality evolve over time. You know, you've been on quite a public journey the last 5 years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So what has changed for you?
Honestly, a lot of things have changed. So I identified as bisexual pretty early. And then my kinks have changed, interestingly enough. Like, I still have a lot of the same ones, but like the vibe has changed. Like, mm-hmm. I'm into DDLG. And in the past, it was more of like a age regression, finding my safe space, just being taken care of. And I'm still into that, but I have less of a focus on the age regression and more just the being taken care of,
yeah,
and like calming down.
The personal attention, yeah, aspect, yeah, of it. Yeah.
So that's been fun.
Yeah. Do you find that you've cultivated within your fans sort of similar, like, do you have a lot of fans that also like personal attention, or is that something that, because I know, mm-hmm, it's always interesting to see, like, within your own sort of sexual development, mm-hmm, and interests, how that kind of is mirrored by those who end up kind of joining your platforms and following. Have you found that experience at all?
I don't really know if I have. I'm not very vocal about, like, what I'm into online. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of fans don't like really know, so they can't quite connect on that level.
Mm-hmm. Is that sort of an intentional choice?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you give a lot and you show a lot of yourself in, mm-hmm, this industry. And while I'm not like ashamed or shy of my stuff, there's some things that I like to keep more in my personal life.
Yeah. Well, I was having another interview where we talked about sort of the difference between the person and the persona, mm-hmm, and how, yeah, oftentimes, and this, I guess, goes back to your point about like getting lost in the scene, that's oftentimes when the persona and the person kind of fuse together and blur, yeah, together. Yeah. So on the one hand, it's probably pretty safe and healthy that you keep a distinction. This episode is brought to you by our sponsors at Adult Time, the ultimate subscription platform for premium adult content. With over 55,000 episodes, 300 channels, and new releases every single day, it's everything you'd want in one place. And you can use promo code BREEMILLS, that's BREEMILLS, to try a free week on us. Assuming you are 18 plus, of course, and you can discover how we do porn differently. What have you discovered about, like, you know, kind of thinking about female sexuality in general and sexuality in general, right? Mm-hmm. You know, across all gender spectrum, like, what do you think some of the biggest myths are out there, and how can we squash them?
Well, just because this is something I've dealt with a lot, there's a lot of like biphobia and bi erasure, even within the queer community. There would be like a lot of people, they're like, you know, you're not really bi if you're a girl and dating a guy. You're just like straight and, mm-hmm, like to pretend. So I've heard that. There's also, you know, some like lesbians who won't date a girl if, you know, they're bi and been, mm-hmm, with guys, which, you know, I respect to some level, but at the same time, it's a little hurtful.
Mm-hmm. I know that I grew up with the term gold star lesbian.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I remember, and I am by definition a gold star lesbian in the sense that I've never been with a man, but I used that term, mm-hmm, online a number of years ago and came under some fire, mm-hmm, some heat, because that is exclusionary to the fact that, you know, it doesn't matter if who you've slept with, it's right, how you identify. And so I've tried to course correct in my own life not to give myself that label. Although, you know, like,
I don't think it's necessarily, yeah, a bad thing. It can be fun.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I've seen a lot of penises, at least by proxy, over the years. So I feel like
close enough.
I don't pretend that I know any more about them, but I appreciate when they work. So there you go.
Yeah.
So what have been some of your, like, you know, kind of most memorable moments in the industry? You know, some, when you look back on your career so far, what were some really, like, kind of cool, interesting experiences you've had?
Well, my first nomination ever, I think it was like a orgy or something. That was really fun and cool. There have been some shoots that were like really exciting. There was one for Deeper that I did called Little Spoons. And it was so fun because we did the whole intro in one take.
Yep.
Yeah, and I really loved filming that and getting more cinematic with things. Mm-hmm. And then, as you mentioned earlier, my feature Feed Me, mm-hmm. that was so fun, so exciting. Definitely one, like, the highlight of my career so far. Mm-hmm. And then also this year, I did a different feature for Delphine Films called Behind the Scenes.
And I saw that.
That was really funny. Yeah. It was my first time doing like a comedy thing, mm-hmm. like that. So that was quite fun.
That was like a mockumentary, right?
Yeah. Supposed to be kind of office-like.
Yeah. But was it like a porn set? Was it like a meta, or was it a fake documentary about kind of a...
Oh, no. It was meta.
It was meta.
Yeah. It was really funny watching the porno within the porno.
The porno within the porno. Very cool. How do you prioritize your own health and self-care? And what have you learned about, like, sexual health that you would advise anybody who's listening or watching to this?
Pee after sex as soon as you can. Jesus Christ.
Why, Lulu Chu? Why must we pee after sex?
You will get a UTI, most likely. We don't like that.
No. UTIs are no fun.
Yeah.
Because there's no manual
right.
when you get into porn, right? So I think the best way we can share information is just by sharing everybody's experience. So, like, what's in your set bag? What's your like process before and after scene and in your civilian life?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm not very great at self-care. But in my personal life, it's a lot of like chocolate and skincare mm-hmm. and watching Pride and Prejudice 2005, Keira Knightley. Yeah.
That there
was
you
another
go.
Big one.
Yeah.
The
there you go. Good.
And then for work, I'm always kind of building on my setback, trying to figure out what I need. But, you know, basics, toothbrush, eye drops just in case, mm-hmm. makeup wipes, baby wipes.
Hair rollers. There you
go. We gotta keep the bangs voluminous.
There you go.
but... So, yeah, there's that. Always brush your teeth before a scene. That is courtesy, please. And mm-hmm. and shower or baby wipe. Not enough people
do that.
About that. Yeah. I know some people like kind of like to prep before a scene. Like they'll play, try to get in the mood. But I don't know. For some, I don't ever really do that. I'm always just kind of like, when can I take my clothes off? Let's get this intro done.
Yeah. What's been like, what was the thing that surprised you the most about shooting mainstream porn, especially here in LA?
How many takes you have to do. I mean, when you're watching porn, you're like, this doesn't look fucking complicated. It's just sex. But then you gotta do like a 30-second intro six times for the three different angles and the safety take and... It was a lot more than I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the whole filmmaking process. All the hours we put into the first 5 minutes. Yeah.
I did not think I would ever have 16-hour-long days for porn.
Yes.
I did not expect that.
Yeah. Or perhaps a prosthetic monster vagina. But things have happened.
It's cool.
Hey, there you go. A huge part of what we do in porn production relates to like our consent practices. And that's another area where I feel like, you know, we almost take for granted how much it's a part of our conversations, at least increasingly across companies. I know not everybody's at the same pace, but there's a total lack of conversations around consent kind of in the civilian world. So another area where we can give good advice, mm-hmm. how do you bring what you learn kind of from your job into life? And what advice would you give for others when it comes to like communication and sex?
Communication and sex. I mean, that's really like just saying that, like that's the whole point. It's not hard either. Just ask, you know, do you like this? Do you want me to do something different? Is this okay? Like in civilian life, yeah, it isn't talked about much. And that's something I've really appreciated coming into the industry and being on sets like yours where we really discuss it at mm-hmm. length. It feels very like reassuring and safe. Mm-hmm. And it kind of not upsets, but I do wish it would change that not all companies have that kind of talk. I've been on many sets where I've had to bring it up myself. Like, can we have a boundary discussion? Mm-hmm. And then a lot of the directors will be like, oh, yeah, like, sure, I guess. Why are you not thinking about that?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in this day and age, like, you would think they would want to cover their ass a little more, you know?
Well, of course, there's the selfish liability aspect. But I think more importantly, there's just, I think even there are people in our industry that also feel kind of a lot like civilians. We're like, I don't know if I want to initiate. I think for me, if I was going to look back over my career, I remember when I first started producing, I was so intimidated by the performers because I felt like you all know what you're doing and I'm going to mess that up by coming in and, you know, like sticking my face in the middle of what's happening. But like, that's how naive I was. I was totally, totally afraid to mess with people's flow. Like, I would be great for all of the acting and mm-hmm. the buildup and everything. But once the sex started, I felt like I was going to ruin their experience, or that maybe they would think less of me because, you know, you all are the experts at what you're doing. And certainly over the years and seeing a lot of the change in the industry, I realized, oh my gosh, that's the most important job of somebody in my position, and that you can't be afraid or intimidated. But it was that same sort of like, how do you start the conversation? How do you ask, are you okay? And even when you have the best of intentions, it can sometimes be hard. So I feel like, you know, to speak to your point about, it's weird that not everybody's doing this. Mm-hmm. I think that there are still like a good number of studios that lack a template to follow or an example to follow. Mm-hmm. And so that's been like a big focus for us, has been to share like an unbranded version of our consent deck, and the number of creators that reached out to us to use that, and the number of directors who we don't work with, yeah. work for other companies that reached out to use that. Even that'll just start,
that's
you
great.
Know, a domino
that's
effect.
Great
yeah.
to hear, honestly.
Yeah. yeah. But it can also be as easy as like just having those in your set bag.
Mm.
And so you're like, oh, you don't got one? Here you go. Right. But chances yeah. are they might keep that and then, you know, might use it the next time. Right. Mm. So I think it does. It's just continuing to make it not a best practice, but like a clear prerequisite.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And that's how things are. And then how much we can show people who are watching our content too. Like, yes, it's fantasy, but hey, here's all the stuff that we do behind the scenes. And hey, maybe it could be good for you to also yeah. do that in your life. And I feel very strongly about that. We are influencers.
I really like with you guys and some others that you really stress the fact that consent can change.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of people, especially like the newer performers, they think, oh, if I've said something earlier, I can't go back on it now. But that's just entirely not true.
Yeah.
I mean, the best studios and the best porn is when everyone is feeling safe and having fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's just really nice, because even it changes day to day, it changes during the shoot. Like, mm-hmm. like you mentioned fluffing earlier, you know, there's some people I'm willing to fluff and there's others I'm not. Mm-hmm. Like, it changes all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And it's I find too, it's like a great way of getting acquainted with your scene partners, right? Because mm-hmm. starting off with that, you know, sometimes very thorough head to toe scan, but like you learn a lot about not just what your partner is not into, but importantly, what they like,
yeah.
right? And then that causes you to think about what you like, which might be different that day for that particular partner or that particular scene, right? Yeah. good to go. Informed consent all the way. Okay, you're a sex ed teacher for a day.
Oh, okay, cool.
You're going to give somebody the education that you never had. What would you teach them? What's the most important like piece of advice when it comes to sex and sexuality and confidence that we could teach people that are watching?
Sex should not hurt, usually, most hopefully always. I feel like a lot of people are into the idea that like pain is like normal and really it's not. Use lots of lube. It's also technically safer than spit since, you know, less like bodily fluid exchange. Mm-hmm. Condoms. Do condoms if you're fucking around. Get tested. I mean, like for civilians, you know, once a month, every other month, probably. Your vagina does not get loose the more you have sex. Great. I also learned that the clit, it's not just like the little thing on the top. Like it kind of like it goes all the way around to like your labia. And I didn't know that before porn. So that was interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like erogenous zones that work. What else about sex? Blue balls is not that important. Fuck them. They complain, say that's your problem. Go jerk off. Yeah, I think that's decent advice.
That is a good, good concise, the Lulu to introduction to sex. Blue balls do not count. Yeah. Go jerk off. No. What's something that you want to do within your career that you haven't done yet?
I haven't shot with kink.com yet. Mm-hmm. That's really on my list because I haven't done much fetish work in general, but I'm really into that. So I'm hoping to expand in general over the next year for that. And then I'm also trying to break into like the queer part of the industry a little more. I did my first trans scenes this year and that was so much fun. So I'd like to try and do that more. Maybe get like a bi MMF. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that'd be sexy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of all. I just kind of like see where it takes me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't plan things too crazily.
What's within the kind of kink world? What would be your like first foray? You mentioned there's some fetishes that you're interested in. So what's top of mind these days?
Well, I mean, general like bondage, of course. I love being tied up in like shibari and all that. Definitely impact play always. I've been thinking more about like electro play, which. A little scary, but yeah. It sounds fun. Safe.
What qualities do you find the most attractive in somebody?
Confidence, intelligence, empathy, a good sense of humor.
What kind of particular style of humor?
Asshole-ish, but in a nice way.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I get you.
Yeah, when you just like, res on people. It's fun.
Yeah. What do you watch porn? Did you ever watch porn before you got into it?
I mean, like, I've watched it here and there, just kind of like out of curiosity. You know, everyone's watching porn. What is it? Mm-hmm. But I've learned that it's not really my thing. I prefer to read my porn.
Yeah.
Sometimes I watch hentai, though. Mm-hmm. That's easier, especially since I don't have to see people I know.
There's that fact as well. Yeah. What would you say are your biggest red flags?
Like my personal red flags?
Mm-hmm. Like the opposite of what attracts you about somebody.
Oh, for them. I thought you were talking about mine. I was
But again, I'm open to any interpretation to that question.
Red flag. Being rude to waiters or customer service people in general, fuck you.
Mm-hmm. I feel you on that.
Yeah.
Why do you need to be mean?
They're just doing their fucking job. They don't run the place. No. Like, whatever.
No.
Someone that, I mean, any level of like misogyny or homophobia or racism, any of the isms, really, I don't fuck with that.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so many red flags in men. Like, how can I even like sort through them?
You listed some big ones.
Yeah.
They're kind of like umbrella red flags.
Yeah.
What, if I was going to kind of end on a question, I think, you know, or actually I've got two questions for you. The first is to kind of go back to the mission of this podcast and just, you know, with Up Close, it's a new studio that we just launched this year. And the whole focus is we wanted to enter the gonzo side of porn, aka the unscripted non-storyline side of porn. Right. Obviously we're much better known for our work in the story space. But we didn't want to go in with another, you know, kind of copycat concept out there. And so the direction that we took was, well, let's really focus on getting to know the women that we're working with and really trying to showcase as much as possible, like their authentic experiences and, you know, just keep it focused on authenticity and intimacy. How does that kind of vision jive with you, especially, you know, in relation to a lot of the unscripted porn that's out there? Is that something that you feel is it important? Like, kind of, how does it speak to you? I'm curious.
Well, I personally, I absolutely love it. I love any emphasis on natural, like happy porn. And I think it's great that people are like wanting to do more of that. And I'm a big proponent of like, you know, porn by women for women. Mm-hmm. There's not a huge market within that. But, you know, it's nice to film. It's nice to kind of be myself more. Mm-hmm. Definitely easier. And I like that your style of gonzo, along with some others, is just, you know, calmer. Yeah. A lot of them are really hardcore, and that can be kind of exhausting.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's a good way to describe it. It is. We aim to make calm, calm, happy, happy porn. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people may be watching who are feeling their own insecurities or their own kind of lack of awareness about their sexuality or their identity. So what advice would you give to someone who's watching who might be feeling, you know, all of those insecurities, and how can we help them?
I would say that with those specifically, with like gender, sexuality, don't be afraid to let it change. I feel like a lot of people think, you know, once I choose something, once I label myself, I can't do anything different. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's perfectly normal for you to change. You could go from thinking you're straight to bi, back to straight, maybe to lesbian. Like, it goes all over the place. And it's okay if you don't know now. Like, there's always time to explore and figure it out. Like, mm-hmm. there's people coming out as gay in like their 60s, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And like consent, it's ever evolving, right? Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure to speak with you, Lulu.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. I've appreciated you since the day we first started talking, and I appreciate getting to know you a little bit better
now. I appreciate you too. Thank you.
Let's give some more appreciation. Can you let everybody know where they can find you and see all your good stuff and all your links and all that stuff?
Yes, my Twitter is LuluChewOfficial. My Instagram is LoveLuluChew. My Fansly is LuluChewOfficial. My Twitch is LoveLuluChew. And I think that's about it.
And if you can probably find the links to other stuff if it's there.
Yeah, there it's you go. On my bio and all that good stuff.
All right, awesome. LuluChew, we are done with Get Up Close. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, high five.
Yeah.
We did it.
Woo!
All right, everybody. I just finished having the most incredible conversation with LuluChew. All right, what did we talk about? We talked about deep-rooted Catholic guilt, unresolved trauma, what it's like being neurodivergent, and why it is always important to pee after sex. So if you enjoyed this convo, if you want to support Lulu, our podcast, the whole mission behind Adult Time, please do us a favor, like, comment, subscribe to this channel. You can find all of our socials also listed in the description below. Once again, I appreciate you taking the time to listen to us and to let us use our community for good. So make sure to check us out next week. Thank you again.